From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk slang. Everybody uses it, but you better know what you're doing. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do every week, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras, at your home in Armilla, Spain. Our brat summer is coming to an end. Kathy, do you have any idea what that means?
Well, I do now.
Very good. Perhaps we will get to that in a moment. Ross Petras, in Toronto, where the brat summer never ends. How are you, Ross?
Doing very well, Fletcher. And that's a really interesting idea you had. Why don't, right off the bat, why don't we do a brat summer right now?
Well, as some of you, many of you may know, Charlie XCX, the musician, referred to Kamala Harris as brat recently. And that sent everyone over the age of, say, 30 or so, running for the nearest teenager to find out what in the world Charlie XCX meant by referring to Kamala Harris as brat. And that includes all of us, I think. And so apologies to the teenagers we grabbed, but you explained it to us fairly well. And I think, Kathy and Ross, you can explain it to the rest of us fairly well right now. Brat, what is this? What is brat?
Well, first, I'd like to point out that, like so many other slang terms, you don't say she is a brat.
Right.
The key is brat is she tweeted, Charlie XCX tweeted, Kamala is brat. It's like, boom, there you go, which is why everybody panicked over a certain age and said, okay, now I'm really confused.
Yeah, and Kath, why don't you read the definition of brat, what Charlie says?
Oh, before her Kamala is brat. Charlie came out with an album called Brat that was like the thing of the summer. And it was called Brat, as I said. And people were saying, what is, why brat? What are you talking about? And what she said was, you're just like that girl who's a little messy and likes to party and maybe says some dumb things sometimes, who feels like herself, but maybe also has a breakdown, but kind of like parties through it. It's very honest, very blunt, a little bit volatile, like does things, but it's brat. You're brat. That's brat. And I got to tell you, I love that because I, as a former young woman, feel like I was brat.
But what really interested both of us, though, was for two things. Number one, where did that word come from? And number two, it's a slang word. And basically now with the internet, slang kind of goes on hyperdrive. A long time ago, a word would kind of insinuate itself in, maybe with teenagers, and gradually move upwards and upwards. In this case, brat came out, and suddenly brat was everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It came out in June. I got to say this. It came out in June.
And June. Suddenly it's, yeah. And suddenly it's brat summer. I mean, that's really amazing. Although I have to say, I found that I just love this. It's so typical of a politician. New York Mayor Eric Adams didn't like how brat summer sounded. He thought it sounded too, you know, I don't know, slangy. So he had a new idea. Let's call it instead SOP, the Summer of Possibility.
Really snappy. Really snappy.
Also the fact that the acronym then is SOP, which is like really bad. What also got Ross and me thinking was like, first, as Ross said, where did brat come from? Well, we had to, of course, do etymology as word people. And I bet you would never guess where the word brat, as opposed to bratwurst, which we all know that too. Any thought at all where the word brat, B-R-A-T, might have come from at all?
The original origin of the word.
Of the word
Any
brat.
Thought?
No, I mean, all I can think of is bratwurst now, especially since you said it, and it's getting on to
lunchtime.
I know,
which I like right
yeah.
now.
A little mustard, too, yeah.
No idea. Where is brat from?
I mean, it's interesting. Chaucer had it from about the 1400s, a cloak of coarse cloth. And so, therefore, brat might really mean Celtic brat cloak, as in, as in like a coat.
But then how do you get it to child is what got me, because then the next step, they said as a term for child was in the 1500s.
But that was Child's Apron, Kathy, possibly.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. But then maybe you just sort of transferred it because it was a Child's Apron. Well, everything was called an apron back then, too, what you wore. You know what I mean? Everything was tied over everything else.
Yeah, that's very possible. Then, of course, it became slang for, you know, kind of a brat, a mischievous child or whatever. Then you some people said, like, from the Rat Pack of the 1950s, they had the Hollywood Brat Pack. Mm-hmm. Or kind of cool people in a way. So maybe it came from, maybe brat came into the current slang from that. We really don't know. But we do know one thing. It is defined this summer. But it's interesting because brat also now has a color. It's acid green, and companies are all over the country are rushing to bring out brat clothing or brat tints or whatever.
Have you guys noticed that, actually? I'm not kidding because I play Scrabble all the time with my husband online. And all the ads have that brat green now with black lettering.
I didn't realize this. Was this Charlie XCX's album cover or something that was that color?
You got it. So now it's that color green with
it's
black.
A brat green.
I mean, Gillette is so brat, right? You know? I mean,
but again though, I think what really interests me though is I'll bet you within 3 or 4 months it's gonna disappear. And brat green is just going to become another color that we have that they're going to go to, you know, I don't know, pinkus pink or something. I don't know what. And that's the real for me, the big thing about slang. It's very ephemeral, usually. And hey, that brings me to a segue, Fletcher.
Ross is being brat.
No.
He's being volatile.
We're calling brat a slang word. Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you define slang for us?
Slang is sort of like informal speech between members of a certain group, a certain cohort, you know, maybe it's age. I guess usually it probably is age because otherwise it ends up being jargon instead of slang.
Ooh, Fletcher, you're getting good here. You're smart.
Thanks.
You are brat. That's exactly what we had. Our notes to us that we're like noticing right now, used very informally, especially by a particular group of people, not considered part of the standard vocabulary of a language.
Mm-hmm.
That's technically or accepted definition of slang.
But the key thing here is linguists really have a lot of troubles clearly defining it. I think in some ways it's like pornography. You know it when you hear it or you know when you see it, but you're not really sure how to exactly define it. But the three things that you and Kathy said are basically true. And we can have like a more technical terms quickly. Its presence will be markedly lower, at least for the moment, and the dignity of formal speech or serious writing. It's lower than that. It usually has a special familiarity with and often with the less responsible quote unquote class of people. And it's a tabooed term in normal discourse. In other words, I don't think you're going to have Biden going, you know, my brat vice president. You're normally not going to use that sort of thing in that way. But basically, I think we've done a pretty good job defining it.
I just want to interject, though, Ross, when you said that Biden thing, because that reminds me, we've talked with Dad, when Dad was trying to sound cool, remember?
Right.
And teachers, and they'd say, let's all rap, you know,
yeah.
Be like,
oh,
what are you talking about? And I think that's a really crucial thing, that whole, what you just said, if you're not part of the cohort, as Fletcher was saying, when you try to use it, and you do, you sound ludicrous, whereas if you're in the group, you don't.
That raises the question here. Now that brat has basically got taken over by Gillette, would we call it slang? I mean, seriously, it still in a way is slang because I think it's a superficial looking backwards and using it. It's still...
Well, this is where you go into... We'll talk about this as we go on, as you know. But that's what I think that's a really interesting point because I think that when Gillette uses brat, if they go like, you know, this new Mach 8 is brat...
Yeah.
It's kind of wants to make you vomit. You know what I mean? Whereas if I'm like a kid and I'm talking to friends and I go, you know, Chelsea's so brat, it's not vomitous.
I think so.
It's how you're using it or who's using it.
And that's true completely. Although sometimes the other interesting aspect is sometimes words that are, and we're going to talk about this as well, words that are slang come into general use, mm-hmm. and suddenly they're not slang anymore. And I was just looking at a linguistics book just the other day, and I didn't realize this, but banter, you know, as in they were bantering,
mm-hmm.
that's slang. That was slang from the 1700s, 1680s. And they used to think, and the same with scamper, which I never thought of either. It came And both of those were Scambrough is apparently a late 1700s word that was used by soldiers getting out of camp, and then it came into
being. Scamp. I must say though, scamper sounds slightly salacious, doesn't it? Somehow, to me, it does. Is it my brain?
That's interesting because it does come from, like I said, ex campo, which is Latin to run off away from the camp, running away from the battlefield. And then apparently soldiers used it in a general way of kind of running about. So you're right, Kath. It does. It has a slightly... Banter, though, I don't think does. Banter has like a really specific meaning to me. Anyway, I think we can go back to that in a minute. But...
Can I just quickly, though, run down, Ross, if you don't mind, a couple of these? Because I like that quick list that the lexicographer Eric Partridge did about slang.
I think it's a good idea, Kath.
It was a list of 15 reasons why people use slang.
One is in sheer high spirits, by the young in heart as well as by the young in years, just for the fun of the thing, playfulness or waggishness.
I love waggishness.
I do too.
Yeah, I never use it. No one says he's such a wag.
I know.
It sounds a little strange. It sounds a little salacious. Two is an exercise either in wit or ingenuity or in humor.
To be different, to be novel.
To be picturesque.
To be unmistakably arresting, even startling.
To escape from cliches, I like this one. Or to be brief and concise. And he said this is actuated by impatience with existing terms. I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
I like to enrich the language. And he mentions Cockneys not being among that. This deliberateness is rare, save among the well-educated. But Cockneys do it. And it was, remember that, you know, the rhyming slang, which is fun.
And this one I like. I love his reasons. It was to lend an air of solidity, concreteness to the abstract, of earthiness to the idealistic, of immediacy and appositeness to the remote.
Or to the opposite, to lessen the sting of something. Sort of a euphemistic.
Or to reduce solemnity or pomposity. I like that one, too.
I like that one, too. And this is sort of the same thing, to soften the tragedy, you know, is a joke for someone dying or something.
And this one is actually just to speak or write down to an inferior or muse a superior public or be on a colloquial level with someone.
Or to, like, have friendliness or intimacy.
And then we go back to the standard ones to, like, show that you belong to a certain group.
Right.
School, trade, profession, artistic, social class.
And finalizing it, I love how he said this. He has a slangish term, idiom here. Hence, to show or prove that someone is not, quote, in the swim.
You know, that's a phrase. That's an idiom you never hear. Do you? No. In the swim.
I don't know if I've ever heard that before. I like that.
No, I like it.
And finally, it's to be secret, not understood by those around one. I love it. These are the chief exponents of that. Children, students, lovers, members of political secret societies, criminals in and out of prison.
And James Joyce.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. Ooh, you're going to be Mr. Finnegan.
That's the only line I think I know from that book. We just quickly want to go over quickly the etymology. What's the background of the word slang? And to tell you something, no one really knows.
Oh.
Some people think maybe it comes from the word to sling, which sort of makes sense, slinging the lingo or something like that.
But it could be like the past tense of sling, right? I slang it.
Yeah, sling, slang, slung. Yeah,
I slang that lingo.
Yeah. Something it could be from the German word for snake, but it also could come from chain as well. And in fact,
chain?
It does
Wait,
have...
What?
It could be, they think, meaning the slang, the word meant chain. A chain or a shackle used to restrain a prisoner.
Oh, okay.
And then from there, it got into like the idea that people who are chained up, like pickpockets or whatever, use words like slangy
words.
But
that was that, from what I read, Ross, that was like dismissed. That thought.
Well, all of them have been pretty much dismissed.
No, I'm going back to the regional word for a narrow strip of land.
A slang?
Yeah, that was it was a name. Didn't we talk about a strip of land recently? Mm-hmm.
We did, and I can't remember what we were talking about with it. Verge or something? No, it wasn't Verge.
But the idea was
I can't remember offhand, but isn't it interesting that we are often talking about words for narrow strips of land? That
I know.
Comes up a
I know.
Lot,
They're very
strangely.
Important.
They have been, I think.
Yeah. And actually, in this case, they were, because people would hang out on these little strips of land, and they were like hawking, you know, stuff, or they were people who were itinerant or whatever, and they would basically speak a certain jargon and slang. And then people listen to them speaking on these verges or stripped, narrow strips of land and go, hey, they're talking slang. That's what it came to be. I don't believe
they're talking
first.
Berm. Or, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
But I do think one key thing here is that slang originally had connotations of an underclass of people, thieves, beggars, people you don't want to be speaking with in civilized society, supposedly. But they have a lot more interesting vocabularies than, quote, civilized society does. Let's put it that way.
Also, people who might need to be creative with their language so that not everybody knows what they're talking about.
Which is what that Eric Partridge was saying, to be secret, not understood. So your criminal is busy going like, you know, did you put the, I don't know, the chair in the fire? You know what I mean? I don't understand why that, but okay. It was all that I thought of. So we have right now, Ross was saying how initially slang referred to, quote, low or disreputable people, their vocabulary. That was in the 1700s. But it slowly began changing. We always talk about amelioration. It was slow, though, in this case. Don't you think, Ross?
Yeah. No, it moved into regular English at a more... I mean, but here we go with a problem, too. We said earlier that slang tends to be informal. And I had said something like, you know, Biden wouldn't call, you know, my brat vice president. He would say my esteemed or whatever. So the question we do have is, even if it were being used by the upper classes or whatever, we can't be really sure if it was or not because they weren't writing it even if they were using it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good question. I see your point, Ross, but I don't think so. I think it's an interesting point, but I don't buy it.
I think you're probably correct. I'm not buying it either, particularly. But, I think it's
but it was a very interesting point.
But anyway, it did come into being. But there was a lot of pushback. And we found something as late as 1967 with Harbor College Handbook. Slang is a slugger's way of avoiding the search for the exact meaningful word.
It's exactly the opposite of that, isn't it?
I think so, too.
Isn't it? It's creating a word that has a very specific meaning.
That's an interesting point because it's so true. Because the key to me of slang, not only to me, but to many people, is that slang often is the only word that means exactly that.
Yeah, or the best word.
Yeah.
I just, as you were speaking, I remember I said banter was originally a slang. I looked up synonym for banter, and the synonym that came up was repartee. And repartee, I think banter is a lot better.
Well, repartee seems more a foo-foo-foo-foo.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, but we can even go to brat. I mean, we listened to Charlie XCX's description of what brat is, and it kind of winds around a lot, and we may still not be 100% sure what she's talking about by the time she gets done with that description, but that's because brat is exactly the right word for what she's talking about.
She is, to me, slang, good slang, real slang, is kind of like poetry, honestly. I know that sounds like overstated, but it's like poetry, you're picking these precise words and you're writing something very short that's certainly not a novel of 100,000 words or 50,000 words. It's like 50 words, but it encapsulates that moment. And that's kind of slang to me. It's also brat, but it's also slang.
Although I'm going to cut in here, some slang I think really stinks. I'm glad that slang goes away. I mean, I think, yeah, all slang ain't good in my opinion.
Okay, you're right. I was being poetic.
I think there are plenty of words in normal speech that stink too, you know?
I agree with you there too.
There's a lot of words.
I think
there's a lot
right.
of sounds we make with our mouths, right? So some of them aren't going to be any good.
Yeah. But the other thing about slang is, and we were talking a bit earlier about it, sometimes it does really give you the word. Other times it's very ephemeral. And in the ephemeral sense, it kind of sometimes defines a generation. Every generation tries to define itself, and slang is one real way they define themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think you can think about your generation, and I know you have certain words that you just instinctively think, this is the class of 82, this is the class of 94, or whatever.
It's true. It's very true.
And I mean, we went through, Kathy and I, we found a couple of weird period pieces of slang. Like we had what was it, Kathy? Nudist slang? What did you
okay, find? Okay, yeah, we're going to ask you, Fletcher, if you have any idea what this is. This is nudist slang from the 60s. So these are naturists. Uh-huh. We are, like, talking about grooving with the Rat Pack in the nude. Okay, textiles. This is a noun referring to a person or people. What would you think a textile is?
Textile must be somebody who does wear clothing.
And in that sense, though, I know it's slang in that sense, but in a way, it's also, oddly enough, jargon, because you're distinguishing in your group someone who's not a, like a professional nudist or something.
I disagree, so
it's,
Ross.
It's sort of useful as well.
It's useful, but it's still slang.
Yeah, and then we have another one, like, I mean, for the flappers, we have ankle. Like, can you guess that, Fletcher?
Ankle?
Let's ankle.
Is it a verb? It's a verb? Is it like to dance?
Yeah, well, walk.
Walk, just
pretty
to
close,
walk.
Though.
Okay.
Ah, it's also, let's get a wiggle on.
That has to be to dance, right? Or is that
no,
to like...
that's walking too, which I don't understand. Because I think that totally sounds like you're jitterbugging. I was fascinated by the word groovy, which I'm trying to bring back because it sounds so silly and I never ever used in real life. It goes back to the 30s.
Hmm.
I had no idea groovy was a 30s word. I thought it was like a, you know, 70s, like, you know, pothead word or 60s pothead word. Didn't you, Ross?
Yeah, I did. I agree with you.
Do you know what? Do you know where it started in the 30s? Because it seems like one of those words that would have sort of percolated within one group for a while and then maybe exploded into the larger culture a few decades later.
It was from the jazz, yeah, which is what, yeah, I kind of thought. Yeah. In the groove. We're in the groove.
In the groove. Yeah.
Yeah. But first it was we're in the groove, then groovy, so it meant we're excellent. Everything's going great. Mm-hmm. And then it just sort of died out.
But I'm going to throw something out here, though. I just saw there's an 1882 reference to it.
To groovy?
Yes. Having a tendency to routine. To be in the groove, and then it became
so like
groovy.
To be
oh, so
stuck,
in that sense, in the groove is bad.
To be like stuck
you're
in
like
a rut.
You're like just a dull year.
In a groove.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Inclined to a specialized and narrow way of life or thought. 1882.
Wow. It's like you're pacing that unmowed strip of land back and forth.
Yeah, well, here we go again. Yeah. Okay, there are two other quick things about slang. First of all, it used to be, because it was considered low, it used to be strongly discouraged, especially for women. And in 1954, during the royal tour of Queen Elizabeth II, she actually was given some diamonds, and she said, this is going to be horrifying to you, Fletcher. She said, this must have cost a packet.
Oh, my.
And people had a thing about that.
I'm kind of outraged.
How dare... And finally, an Australian magazine, this was in Australia, came up into her defense and said, she is a young woman, modern in her outlook, and naturally enough, given to using phrases and expressions as a young woman should. And this was interesting, too, because most slang seems to come from young people, as you said, and quite often from women, even though they were discouraged in using it.
I just want to add my final note here is that I got interested in, like, we were talking about what slang, what's jargon, and then these words ages ago we talked about choogy being added to the OED. Wasn't that the name, the word of the year? I believe that was it.
And I don't think I've even thought about that word since whenever we talked about that.
Nor have we, to be honest with you, and I think nor have many other people. So we go back to, when a word is added to the dictionary or named the special word of the year, to be added to, say, to the OED, it takes 5 years. So usually if it's slang, you figure by the time it gets in there, it's probably not even being used anymore, right?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless it's something like banter or something like that where it fits a specific need and it works really well. Then it will remain.
Because that's the one thing, Ross and I have talked about this a million times just in conversation. How many articles we see, particularly business ones, about like, you got to know the current slang to be able to communicate with your employees and blah, blah, blah. And we look at these lists and we think, first of all, I suspect the employees are looking at the boss thinking, oh, for God's sake, please stop.
Yeah.
I think so too. I agree.
So I don't think it's chew. I think it is choogy.
Yeah.
But like someone said, like geek and nerd, both had slang, both were slang, and but there are words that sort of work, really. Mm-hmm. And I think geek and nerd work, and they're going to stay in the language. I don't think Chuggy is.
What do you guys think about brat? Do you think guys think brat's going to last?
I don't think so.
It doesn't feel like one that will last. But heck, what do I know? I mean, I'm an old sitting here talking about whether something will last in the language. The reason I don't really think so is just because it's such a phenomenon. Like it blew up so fast, it feels like it'll burn out. Not that I think it's any less legitimate than any other slang term. It just feels like something that will explode and then burn out.
Also, I think a new generation is going to come and they're going to go, we don't want to use those right. old-fashioned sure. words. We want to use some new ones.
Speaking of, you were saying it exploded, blah, blah, blah. In the old days, we got it from movies, from TV, from radio. Yeah. With the internet, it's boom, as mm-hmm. you said, yeah. Ross. It's hyper. It's like, do you think that makes them less prone to catch on because they didn't sort of develop organically?
They didn't percolate a little bit. I think that could be the case. But I don't know, though. The other side of the coin is you could get so many people using it that it... Yeah. I think it's like two things going against each other. One, it goes so fast it might burn out. The other is so many people hear it and use it that it might stay because there are a lot more mm-hmm. people doing it. So I think it's two things going against each other, and it kind of depends.
What do you think, Fletcher?
Well, another thing about brat, and I'm assuming here that Charlie XCX invented this usage of brat. I don't know that to be the case, but I'm going to assume mm-hmm. that. That's not something that developed organically within a group, if she's the one who invented this usage. And so because of that, it also doesn't feel like it's something that would necessarily stick around, because it didn't organically develop and have mm-hmm. have a following, you know, so to speak, of people who use it casually, and then it doesn't spread in the same way. And not having that organic development, to me, makes it seem less likely to stick around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also think that was very Brad.
Thank you. I've always said that about myself.
Everyone does, Fletcher.
I like these from the 1840s. The guy wrote Memoirs of Extraordinary Popular Delusions. It's a very famous book. And he listed a number of hugely popular catchphrases. Has your mother sold her mangle? Walker, Quaz. Flare up. There he goes with his eye out. And the author said, this is in 1840, the slang par excellence of Londoners, and afforded them a vast gratification. And now, all gone, not to mention forgotten. I'm not sure. Quaz, flare up.
I like as your mother sold her mangle. I don't want to know what that meant.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.